Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Chairs No Waiting, episode number 569. Jack Burns, More Than War. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the folks over at Weaver's Department Store. Drop by over at Weaver's and check out some of the great new items they have over there. They've got the Mayberry Squares t-shirt. I'm actually wearing it tonight. I love it. It's a great shirt. Go check that one out. And if you don't like that one, it's full of all different characters. You can get one that's all Barney. It's only four squares. It's called Barney Squares t-shirt. There's four of them. So it's two square. Head over to Weaver's Department Store and check it out. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners just like you. The executive producer of episode number 569 is Mike McGonigal. Mike McGonigal. Yeah, he's our Patreon, one of our Patreon patrons. So thank you, Mike. Thank you for being here with me in Mayberry. It is always so much fun to just spend some time in Mayberry with all of you. Every week I get to spend with some of my Mayberry friends, you and some of the other folks that also listen. It's always great fun just to talk about the Andy Grubba Show and to hear something from Randy Turner. It's all fun. So I hope you're going to enjoy it. Tonight we're going to be talking about, or today when you're listening to this, we're going to be talking about Jack Burns. Jack Burns was Warren Ferguson, but he was more than Warren. And I'm not sure you really realize all that. If you didn't know, he recently passed away. So we're going to be talking about him. And that information can all be found in the Weaver's newsletter. So if you don't get the Weaver's newsletter, it's the sister publication to the e-bullet. Okay, so the Weaver's newsletter for February 2020 has this information in it. It has all kinds of other stuff too. So if you're looking around and want to go check out just the kind of things that Weaver's had, it's got t-shirts in there. It's got all the Weaver's stuff, obviously. And it also has the same stuff you'd see in the e-book, basically. The calendar of events. It has the cast and crew news. It has all that kind of stuff in the Weaver's newsletter. So I definitely want to encourage you to head over there and check it out. You can go to Weaver's Department Store, and up in the top corner there, you'll see Weaver's newsletter. You can sign up. It's free. And I'll have a link in our show notes too. So if you'd like to just come to the show notes and check it out, you can do that. So we're not going to go through most of the stuff that's in the Weaver's newsletter. I want you to go and check it out. But there is a section that Jim Clark, who writes the Weaver's newsletter and is the presiding goober of the Andy Grubba Show Rerun Watchers Club, He called it Maybituaries. I don't remember him calling it that before. I guess he has, and I just didn't. I don't know. I didn't catch it till the day. But I wanted to just give you this information because we're going to talk about Jack Burns. And this is not I don't want this to be just a sad day or anything like this. This is remembering his amazing career. Now, some of you may or may not love the character of Warren, but that wasn't really Jack Burns' fault. You know, he was asked to follow Don Knotts, and you know, that was just a hard job. And I think they wrote the character like it was still Barney, and that made it very hard for him. So we're going to read this this nice remembering Jack Burns story that Jim Clark has in the Weaver's newsletter for February 2020. So let me play a little background music. Just a little soft music here. There we go. Jack Burns, who played eager and endearing and annoying deputy Warren Ferguson on 11 episodes of The Andy Grubba Show, died of respiratory failure resulting from complications of pancreatic cancer in California on January the 27th. He was 86. Jack was hired for the Andy Griffith Show after Andy Griffith saw him perform at San Francisco's famed Hungry Eye nightclub. Jack gamely took on the assignment of trying to replace Don Knotts, Barney Fife, as the Mayberry deputy. And in retrospect, it was an impossible task. No one could replace Barney Fife. Jack was unfortunately notified of his termination from the Andy Griffith Show right before Christmas in 1965. Andy Griffith was quoted in the press at the time saying, "We tried to force Jack to do those wild, peculiar things that Knotts did, and he was willing to try, but we made a mistake." The abruptness and timing of Jack's departure from Mayberry understandably left Jack uninterested in having any further association with Mayberry, including various fan-oriented events through the years that followed. That said, Jack's career before and after Mayberry was legendary. He enjoyed an enormously productive and happy life with iconic success. He was revered by his peers and fans of comedy, both for his performances and for his writing. He has been called a comic's comic. John Francis Burns was born of Irish lineage in Boston, Massachusetts on November the 15th, 1933, to his father Garrett, a U.S. Army Air Corps and U.S. Air Force officer, and mother Mary Hogan. The family frequently moved to follow Garrett's new military postings, and Jack joined the Marines himself in 1952 and served in Korea during the Korean War. He achieved the rank of sergeant before deciding to leave the military when his hitch was up. Taking advantage of funding available through the GI Bill, Jack moved back to Boston to study broadcasting at Leland Power School of Radio, Television, and Theater in Brookline, with the goal of becoming a radio newsman. In 1959, he became the news director at WEZE-AM. While working for the station, he interviewed John F. Kennedy. Jack met George Carlin at WEZE, where Carlin worked as a DJ. The two discovered that they shared not only an Irish Catholic heritage, but also a love of language and a keen sense of humor. Following separate career paths, Jack as a newsman and Carlin as a DJ, both men soon ended up at KXOL Radio in Fort Worth. Carlin in 1959 and Jack in 1960. They performed together at local clubs, and Jack decided he liked doing comedy even more than being a straight newsman. Later in 1960, he and Carlin decided that California was the place he ought to be, so they loaded. That's a different story. But this time they traveled together as a team to California. The pair landed at KDAY Radio in Los Angeles, and more important, they landed comedy gigs at Cosmo Alley Coffee House, a club of which cutting-edge comic Lenny Bruce was a part owner. Bruce loved their act and provided the young comedic duo with key connections for the comedy club circuit. Billed as Burns and Carlin, they became one of the hot comedy teams touring top clubs across the country. By October of 1960, they had landed a spot on Jack Parr's Tonight Show. They were also favorite entertainers at the first Playboy Club in Chicago. As Burns and Carlin, they recorded one album together. It's called At the Playboy Club Tonight, which was actually recorded at Cosmo Alley. For the ERA label, it was in May 1960 when they recorded it. The album wasn't released until 1963, after Jack and Carlin had amicably split in 1962. The album included a routine about newsmen, and even one about fellow comedian Lenny Bruce and Mort Shaw. Carlin was eventually given the rights to the album, which was re-released with a new formatting tweaks as the original George Carlin back in 1972, and then again as Killer Carlin in 1981. In part because that Jack and Carlin were so much alike that their maximum comedic contrast just wasn't there, they split. Carlin became a legendary solo comedian. Jack went on to Chicago, where he joined the Second City, which in turn is where he met his comedic opposite, Thumb, Avery Shriver, with whom he teamed off and on from 1962 to 1973. Their trademark routine was the one in which Jack played a chatty, bigoted conventioneer to Shriver's grumpy cab driver. Jack's signature, you know what I mean? Huh? That bit was born from the conventioneer and the cab driver sketches. They appeared on numerous television appearances together and recorded two albums. They became sought after guest hosts for television shows and for guest spots where they would have them on the Kraft Music Hour, the Hollywood Palace, and the Ed Sullivan Show, places like that. In 1973, the Burns and Shriver Comedy Hour was a huge hit. The following year, the show received the Writers Guild of America Award for the Best Variety Series or Special, Musical or Comedy. Now, here's something you may not know. Jack also wrote for and produced all 24 episodes of The Muppet Show in its first season in 1976 to 77, and was co-writer with Jerry Jewell of The Muppet Movie in 1979. For his Muppet work, Jack was nominated for two Emmys in 1977 for Outstanding Comedy Variety or Music Series and for Outstanding Writing in the same category. And he was nominated for Saturn and Hugo Awards in 1980 for his work on The Muppet Movie. What a career he's had. Amid his writing and producing, Jack still had time to perform. Notably, he made appearances including as Officer Rudy Kolchek in all 14 episodes of a show called Getting Together, a 1971 spinoff from The Partridge Family. And in segments in five different episodes of Love American Style between 1971 and 73. He did many more things. And as we move forward in time, for a new generation of viewers, Jack's voice would have been even more familiar than his face, because he provided the voice of many animated programs, including Mother Goose and Grimm and The Animaniacs. On there, he played Sid the Squid. Mr. Burns was also a voice in an episode of The Simpsons back in 1999. But Jack's most familiar work is likely his performances as Vince the Crash Test Dummy. He worked along with pal Lorenzo Music, a.k.a. the voice of Carlton the Doorman, or the lasagna-loving Garfield, who played his fellow dummy, Larry, in the wildly popular and effective safety belt commercials for the Department of Transportation that ran from 1985 to 1998. Jack is still also believed, he's also believed to have contributed to the punching up of the humor of some of the writing for those spots. He did so many things. He did behind the scenes work. There's so much in Jim's story that's in the Weaver's newsletter that I'm not going to try to read it all. But I will tell you that Jack officially retired in 2000, but he did perform One More Time at 2003's The Pitts, a failed sitcom. Despite his efforts of Seth MacFarlane and alums of The Simpsons and Seinfelds at the helm, didn't make it. Jack leaves no immediate survivors, but he has bequeathed wonderful memories for legions of fans and friends. Manager Peter Santana said following Jack's passing, he was as sharp as a tack mentally, but had not worked for 2 years, had not walked for 2 years. He achieved many great achievements, but his most recent was hitting the 31 years sober mark in December. Truly a sweet and talented man. Though his Warren Ferguson character turned out to not be the most natural fit for Mayberry, Jack deserves praise for having had the gumption to step into the role. Mayberry is a more memorable and interesting place because of the sensitivity Jack brought to his portrayal of Warren. And the world is absolutely made a better and funnier place because of Jack Burns. Right? Huh? Right. So, there we go. Jack Burns. There's much more to that story. Please go and check out the Weaver's newsletter. There'll be a link in the show notes, or you can go over to weaversdepartmentstore.com. The link to the newsletter is there in the top. If you're on your phone, you'll have to do the menu, it's got a little hamburger button. You click and it'll expand out the menu, and you can choose the Weaver's newsletter and go and read the latest edition of the Weaver's newsletter. Also in the newsletter, I wanted to bring this up too. Gene Reynolds, he passed away recently as well. Now, Gene Reynolds, you may not know who this is. He directed 3 episodes of The Andy Griffith Show, and he passed away from heart failure in Burbank, California on February the 3rd. He was 96 years old. He directed the iconic first season Andy Griffith Show episode, Alcohol and Old Lace, that one, as well as Andy the Marriage Counselor, and Mayberry on Record, you know, the one with Leroy and the Country Boys and the guy recording the stuff. These were 3 of the episodes immediately following director Bob Sweeney's tryout with his first 6 Andy Griffith Show episodes. Gene was likely an interim choice, hired to fill the gap between beloved Sweeney when he cleared his calendar and negotiated to direct more episodes of the Andy Griffith Show. He went on, Sweeney did, to direct 74 of the next 76 episodes through the 3rd season, by the way. Gene Reynolds was often noted primarily for his key role as a producer and executive producer of the MASH television series, for which he also directed 24 episodes, and for which he was officially involved in the writing of more than a dozen episodes. But Gene's legendary career extends way back as a childhood actor. Eugene Reynolds Bartholomew was born in Cleveland, Ohio on April the 4th, 1923, and he was the son of a serial businessman and real estate entrepreneur, Frank Eugene Bartholomew, and Maud Evelyn Schwab, a former model. After living for a while in Highland Park outside of Detroit, the family moved to California in search of greater opportunities for work during the Great Depression. Gene, this is really cool. While he's still just a kid, he studied acting at the famed Pasadena Playhouse. His first film role was an extra in a 1934 Our Gang short. It's called Washy Irony. It followed later that year with a small role in a classic Laurel and Hardy musical, Babes in Toyland. It was also called March of the Wooden Soldiers, a.k.a. March of the Wooden Soldiers. Other early films included small roles in 2 Shirley Temple films, Heidi in 1937 and The Bluebird in 1940. His acting was so impressive, it caught the eye of MGM Studios, which signed him to a contract when he was only 14 years old. 2 of his films of the studio were classics, Captain Courageous in 1937 and Boys Town in 38, both starring Spencer Tracy and Mickey Rooney. He also played Jimmy McMahon in the 1938's Love Finds Andy Hardy with Rudy, Judy Garland, and Lana Turner. Wow. There's so much more here. I don't want to read all this to you. I want you to go and check this out. There is so much. He was involved in so many things. It is always so amazing to me to hear the actors and directors from the Andy Griffith Show. He did work with MASH. He did work with Lou Grant. There's just so many things. Please go and check out Jim's amazing write-up about this wonderful man. And also, I'll end it here by saying, in his filmed interview for posterity with the American Television Academy, Gene said, "I'm always looking for a little humane touch, something that is real. It could be very, very small. It could be a hand on the shoulder. It could be just extra lingering look on somebody you care about and so forth for just a fraction of a second. It could be a reaction from somebody. I'm looking for humanity, really." And that goes with comedy or drama. Anyway, so that was... And lastly, another passing I want to mention is Fred Silverman. Fred Silverman passed away on January the 30th. He was 82. Now, Silverman was the head of programming at CBS. Don't be mean to him. He orchestrated the rule purge at the network in the spring of 1971, canceling, quote, every show with a tree in it, end quote, which included the highly rated shows such as Mayberry RFD, The Jim Neighbors Hour, The Beverly Hillbillies, Green Acres, and Hee Haw. And he also canceled the new Andy Griffith Show, which already had its own struggles, and regardless of the purge, and whose cancellation was probably actually an act of mercy for all concerned. Though that mass cancellations, that was painful for Mayberry folks, especially like Richard O'Link, who managed Stars and had ownership interests on all three of those shows. The overhaul worked well for CBS as it cleared the way for shows like Mary Tyler Moore, All in the Family, Kojak, and MASH. He left CBS and went on to ABC, where he shepherded such hits like Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, and the miniseries Roots. He did that. Silverman did redeem himself with Andy Griffith when he became executive producer of Matlock in 1986. The two titans of television buried the rule purge hatchet to become not only successful business partners, but great friends. Silverman also went on to serve as executive producer for Andy's 1995 made-for-TV movie, Gramps. So in the end, maybe fans can forgive Silverman for his programming clear cut back in 1971. And besides, Silverman is the man who came up with the idea and the name for Scooby-Doo in 1969. So, zoinks! Silverman definitely deserves a special Scooby snack for that one. Friends, there is so much information out there in both the Weaver's newsletter and the e-bullet. Please go and check them out. There's so much. Go and check them out. The link will be in the show note. I'll put a link for both. Subscribe. They're free. You'll get an email telling you, hey, there's a newsletter. So go and check that out. And I just want to remember Jack Burns. I've always felt sorry for him because I felt like he kind of got a raw deal out of the whole thing. Anyway. So I don't know how y'all feel. All right, so let's go now and hear from our buddy, Randy Turner.
Welcome to This Week in Mayberry History, a report by special correspondent Randy Turner of the Gomer and Cooper Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild of the Mayberry Historical Society.
If Mayberry fans consider the difficult life that actor Wallace Ford lived, they might be less hard on the irritating character of Roger Hanover he played so well. Wallace was born Samuel Jones Grundy on February the 12th, 1898, in Lancashire, England. His childhood was absolutely Dickensian. He was born to a family of limited means and was separated from his parents at such a young age he had no memory of them. Samuel's parents placed him with an aunt and uncle, who only kept him to the age of three before putting him in an orphanage asylum in London, nearly 3 hours south. He thus had no memories of them either. Samuel later said he had memories, while vague, of being on a ship in 1905 when he was sent at the age of seven to Canada as part of the British Empire's program to populate their North American territory. He was first in a Canadian orphanage in Toronto, then was adopted by a farming family in Manitoba in the center of Canada, where he was mistreated so badly he ran away. After being apprehended and returned, Samuel ran away again. This led to him being placed with another farming family. The same situation arose there, and over the next 4 years, Samuel lived in 17 foster homes, where he was again often mistreated, until he finally ran away to live on his own at the age of 11. In 1911, at the age of 13, Samuel joined a vaudeville troupe called the Winnipeg Kiddies in Canada, which exposed him to performing. After 3 years of, in essence, on-the-job training, in 1914, at the age of 16, Samuel and a friend of his named Wallace Ford made their way from Canada into the United States, riding the rails as itinerants. Before they could begin a new life, his friend Wallace was crushed to death under the train's wheels while trying to jump a boxcar. During World War I, Samuel served with the United States Cavalry while stationed in Fort Riley, Kansas. After completing his service, he moved to New York and played small roles in various touring productions throughout the Midwest and the Plain States, even performing on showboats. When he began his acting career in the United States, Samuel adopted the stage name by which he is known. He began performing as Wallace Ford, adopting the name of his friend and traveling companion who had been crushed to death by the railway car 5 years earlier. In 1918, and now known as Wallace Ford in tribute to his friend, Wallace's career began a steady rise when he joined the cast of the Broadway version of what was a best-selling novel at the time by writer Booth Tarkington called 17. The play also starred a very young Ruth Gordon. He joined the traveling company after it closed, and the show was a hit in Chicago for another 9 months. Wallace appeared in his second Broadway production in 1919, playing the condemned boy sentry who was pardoned by the president in the play Abraham Lincoln. In 1921, Wallace appeared in a dramatic play that ran only 16 performances. 6 months later, he appeared in his fourth Broadway play, a 1922 comedy which, coincidentally, also ran only 16 times. Wallace followed that by originating the role of Abie in Abie's Irish Rose, a comedy about a young Jewish man who marries an Irish Catholic girl over their family's objections. While Wallace did not appear in the Broadway production during its entire run, the show was an enormous hit. While critically panned, it ran nearly 5.5 years. Wallace stayed with the production for 56 weeks, finally leaving because he said he had simply grown bored. By the way, the touring production of Abie's Irish Rose ran for 40 years, the record until it was broken by Hello Dolly, which began touring in the 1960s. Wallace met his future wife during the production, as she was playing one of the bridesmaids. They married in 1922. Between 1923 and 1924, Wallace was in three more short-lived Broadway productions. But in September of that same year, he was cast in another hit show. Wallace was one of the stars of the comedy Pigs. The show ran for 10 months with 312 performances. Wallace stayed for the show's entire run. Wallace returned to Broadway in January 1929, co-starring in the Broadway drama Gypsy, which is unrelated to the later musical of the same name. That fall, he originated the role of Willie Barton in The Nut Farm, which opened on Broadway in October of 1929. But during its run, his first appearance in a movie was released, opening up a new field for the young British actor who had risen from such a depressing background to become a successful working actor in America, a path that would eventually lead him to Mayberry. That's it for this week. As always, thanks for listening. And remember to take Andy's advice and go out there and act like somebody.
Thank you again, Randy. I didn't know any of that stuff about Wallace Ford. If you want to make sure you find out things like Randy comes up with, send him an email at turnersgrade@gmail.com, turnersgrade@gmail.com, so you won't miss out on any of the cool Mayberry stuff that he's doing, because he's doing several new things. Send him an email, get signed up. You'll love it. All right, folks, that is all I have for you tonight. I want to thank you for being here. If you're planning on coming to the Two Chairs Meetup over at the University of North Alabama in Florence for the George Lindsay UNA Film Festival, I'd like to hear from you. Make sure you email me. Let me know so I can get you information so we get all signed up and can connect up when we're over there. That's coming up, when is it? March the 6th and 7th, I believe. I'm looking. Yes, I got it right. March 6th and 7th, mostly the 7th. We're going to have time. We're going to be able to go and tour the library where all the collection is stored of all of George's stuff. We're going to be able to see the Mayberry Effect movie. And we're going to go out and eat together. We're going to visit together at the hotels. We're just going to have a good time visiting with fellow Mayberry folks. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Definitely send me your email and I'll try to reach out to everybody that I've gotten an email from in the next week or so here, so that you know, because it's only a couple of weeks. So we'll see y'all then if you can be there. Folks, if you're not coming, or if you are, I would still love to hear from you. If you'd give me a call at 888-684-8415, that's one way. I'd like to hear your voice. Or you can email me at floyd@imayberry.com. Or you can just head over to Two Chairs No Waiting. All that information's there. Folks, it is always fun to be here in Mayberry with you. I'm glad you took time to sit around with me and go through some of the stuff in the Weaver's newsletter. Go and sign up for that. Man, I'm giving you a lot of things to do. Just head over to Two Chairs No Waiting. All the information's there, contact information, all that stuff is there. You'll find it. Folks, until next time, have a great Mayberry week, and we'll see you right here on Two Chairs.